Ellie Freedman in a couple minutes. Someone who actually knows things. Rather, those change it up. Rather than the conjecture and the speculation of a bozo. What a special treat for you, the listener, to have a break. But first, me on football. Bills decimate the Miami Dolphins last night. And yeah, I want to talk about Tua and a couple of other things from that game, but I got to start with this. Here's what we need to stop doing as a collective, because we're all guilty of this. Outside of the, like, actual diehard Bills fans, the Ariel Helwanis of the world, right? I was happy for my friend yesterday, by the way. We, as a football collective, as a media collective, seem to have this overwhelming urge to close the window of the Buffalo Bills. It's like the only way we can talk about the Buffalo Bills. It's just that same thing over and over. Is the window closed? Did they just miss the window? Did the window close? Oh, boy. Well, if they didn't win this year, oh, man, they lost Matt Milano? Surely they will not be able to win. Well, the Diggs trade happened there onto a rookie quarterback, a rookie wide receiver. How will they ever be able to move the chains? What is this team? Sean McDermott, the Bills are the class of that division. The Bills have Josh Allen. He is arguably the most talented quarterback in the NFL. We do all this stuff about, like, Joe Burrow, right? It's Joe Burrow's coming back to the Bengals, and the Bengals, they're back. It changes the landscape of the AFC. Why doesn't the Bengals window close when their quarterback has a wrist injury, hasn't been able to stay healthy? Like, what is the differentiator with Buffalo and some of these other franchises? Like, Miami was favored yesterday, and I fell for it. I was sitting there before the game going, you know, it's going to be tough for the Bills to defend the middle of the field, and you got to imagine that Tua's going to move the ball on these guys, and the run game looks good, and they've got all these weapons, and how will Buffalo's defense contend with these guys? And they were down to Arizona earlier this week, and then you forget that, no, they came back because Josh Allen is a mutant. He is, again, arguably the most talented quarterback in the NFL. The Chiefs, and I know the Chiefs have won, but the Chiefs go through a cycle where they don't have any pass catchers. And we doubted them at times. We questioned whether they would have enough. There's no doubt about it. And Buffalo doesn't have anybody of the ilk of Travis Kelce. But with those guys, with, like, Lamar Jackson and with Patrick Mahomes and so many of the other top-tier quarterbacks, we automatically give them the grace of, well, they're clearly going to be contenders because they have this guy at the head of the snake. And yet Buffalo seems to be oddly different. And yesterday kind of served as a reminder before the Tua injury, because I think Tua got hurt when it was still 31-10. I think they were driving to make it 31-17. He has the unfortunate play with DeMar Hamlin where he goes headfirst into him instead of sliding after he's picked up the first down. And then he gets the, I think they call it the fencing position with his arm. You could see it right away where the arm goes up straight. It's a telltale sign of a concussion. The game was already in hand, but you go, oh man, this is awful. Like, what an awful thing to happen to Tua Tagovailoa, a guy that by all accounts is a terrific human being. Someone who I think is still very much in the prove it phase of his career, trying to ascend to that level of quarterback, the I can win level of quarterback. But man, outside of that injury and how tough it's going to be for Dolphins fans, because, like, let's face it, your season's over. Tua can't play next week. I'm not sure when he should return. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to play concussion doctor. It was sad. It was ugly. It's especially unfortunate given his concussion history, but I'm not going to start doing the whole, like, his career's over. But just, like, what this Dolphins team looks like with their offensive line, it just felt same old Dolphins to me. Oh, well, they made it. Now you're the same old Dolphins, and you're in the same old division with the same old Josh Allen, who owns you. He dominates them. His record against the Dolphins is absurd. His record on Thursday night games is also absurd, and I completely ignored all this history yesterday again when betting this game. But yeah, we gotta stop doing it. We all need to breathe. If the Buffalo Bills do not win the Super Bowl this year, and barring a Josh Allen trade request, We need to stop doing the thing about the window. And I'm going to try my best. And I know it's such a tempting narrative. It really is. It's so tempting to go, well, that's it for them. Maybe it's because they're a tortured franchise. So it's like we're trying to put them in their place. But who else do we do this to? Like, we didn't do it to the Ravens last year. Ravens had their arguably best team. And they blew it to the Kansas City Chiefs. And they lost Mike McDonald, their defensive coordinator. Their team clearly got worse. We didn't do is the window closed? It just seems to be the Bills over and over and over again that we do this to. And yesterday, again, served as a reminder that they have just an incredible talent back there. Like a guy who can just completely control a football game. And yesterday they didn't even like fully really need him. But yeah, as long as Josh Allen is in that division, I got to stop trying to romanticize the other teams around him. I got to just stick to my guns and say it's the Bills, okay? It's the Bills until Josh Allen leaves his prime. I'm not worrying anymore about Josh Allen's injuries or the carries that he takes or the wide receivers that he has, whatever it is. We got to stop talking about window closing with the Buffalo Bills. We got to start talking more about the window closing with Toronto Maple Leafs. That's how do we do it. Elliot Friedman, host of 32 Thoughts, joins me now. Good morning, Elliot. Thanks for doing this, man.
Good. My pleasure, JD. Good morning to you, too.
Good morning. Good morning. Let's just dive right into it. I want to get into a couple of Leafs things today because, yeah, they've had some transactional news as of late. I'm going to start with Nick Robertson. He ends his holdout, and it happens kind of quickly. He signs the one-year deal for $875. What is your impression of where this goes from here? Was this something to kind of calm the waters? Are they still going to explore trades for him? Or is your impression that, you know, he is legitimately going to be starting the season with this team?
I think all of that, JD, is going to be determined over the next couple of weeks. I don't think the Maple Leafs are unhappy that things look crowded. I do believe part of this is to create internal competition for spots, make people maybe be a little bit uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing I always say is that if someone calls you and gives you what you want, then you go and you make your move. Mm-hmm. But if that doesn't happen in the short term, I don't think Toronto's going to have a problem at all with a training camp where they've got some players looking around and saying, where do I fit here? Or I can do the math and somebody's going to leave. What are the chances it's going to be me? I don't think they're unhappy with that kind of setup at all.
So then let's move to the Pacioretty part of this. They haven't signed him yet. They bring him in on the PTO, but it seems like it's going to be a done deal. Like it's one of those.
Sure does.
Yeah. Hey, don't worry about it. You're not really trying out. So how does that kind of fit into the competition if they're telling a 36-year-old who's coming off of two Achilles tears that, you know, he's basically going to be guaranteed a spot on this roster?
Well, you're basically is doing a lot of work there. Like if Pacioretty comes and has a terrible camp and he doesn't look good, then, you know, then we've got a problem.
Yeah.
Like I think, you know, Pacioretty is smart enough and he's been around long enough to know that he at least has to perform here. Like doesn't have to give them any red flags in the preseason. If something shows up where either he can't move or he can't play or it creates a concern, then that contract's not going to happen. But if he just basically comes and, yep, he's ready to go, maybe he doesn't light up the preseason, but you're not seeing anything that really concerns you, he's going to be on the team. So he has to fulfill his end of the deal. Mm-hmm. Look, people aren't stupid. They can see what's going on around them. I think the interesting thing is over the next couple of weeks and in these games, it's going to be interesting to see what the roster is, who plays a lot. You know, that's usually one of the tells, JD, is, you know, your superstars. You know, Patrick Kane was one of those guys. I used to ask a question early in the year, how many exhibition games do you want? And a lot of the top players would say one or two. Patrick Kane was one of the few. He'd say, if you could tell me I could play five or six, I would play five or six. Mm. But generally, the guys who play more games are the guys who are on the bubble. So, you know, one of the things you look for is who plays a lot. That's number one. Number two, now, who plays on the road? because a lot of these teams, what they do is they don't send their top players on road games. Now, there's a minimum you have to hit. You have to have what's called, I think, 8 veterans. But, you know, the preseason games, you know, to take care of your fans who have to buy them as part of your season ticket package, you generally make sure your best players play only at home and not on the road. I also find who goes on the road. And, JD, that's how we're going to figure out who's on the bubble here. Mm. It's who gets a lot of games, who plays on the road, things like that.
Mm. So, but with Pacioretty, where's your feeling or where's your understanding as when it comes to his health? Because it sounds like what we're discussing here is that it's not going to be about him scoring goals. Like, they're not looking for him to be lighting up the preseason, as you said. It's something where, hey, yeah, are you skating okay, and are you triggering red flags when it comes to your health? But where is he, yes, with your understanding today?
I think he's pretty good. I told this story on the pod this morning, but I took my wife and son to see Pink in the summer, the night she was here.
I can't wait to see where this is going. This is good. This is great. I'm strapped in.
I took my wife and son to see Pink at the Rogers Center in the summer. And after we parked, we were walking over to the Dome, and we walked into him.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, hey, you know, what are you doing here? And he said he kind of, the wheels started turning. I really missed it in the moment because I was with my family. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, I'm just here visiting some friends. Well, it's pretty clear he was here, you know, getting tested. The Leafs were taking a look at him. You know, like, I saw him at the end of last season. Washington came in pretty late. Mm-hmm. And I just asked him, and he said, I'm looking forward to this summer because it's the first time I'm going to, in 3 summers, I'm going to be able to really train properly. Mm-hmm. You know, Pacioretty is a physical marvel. We did a piece on him years ago. And, you know, he like, physically, he is absolutely a gifted human being. And even by professional athlete standards. So, like, he's, you know, you're thinking as long as he gets the opportunity to train, which he did this summer, he's going to be okay. So I think that, so he definitely had more of an opportunity to train this summer than any time in the previous 2. I think they're hopeful that's going to lead to something. like you said, JD, in the preseason, I'm not necessarily looking for Pacioretty to score 12 goals in 3 games, but can he move? Can he cut? Does he have a burst? I think that's the stuff we're all looking for here.
I thought where this was going to go is that because I'm an old guy who still likes to go to shows, that you're going to say, yeah, you and Pacioretty are the same age. You know, how would you feel on your feet standing there after an entire Pink concert? Like, you watched him the whole time. He was on his feet. He didn't hold his back in the middle of the show. You know, he wasn't shuffling his feet. He didn't make multiple trips to the bar just to be able to get a break. He stood there the entire Pink concert and danced. That looks pretty healthy to me. I would have been like, you know what? Case closed. He's ready to go. He's ready to go for camp. Okay.
You know what? I give you credit, JD. That's a better story than the one I told. I should just come up with that.
You can use it. It's yours. So
thanks.
How does Easton Cowan fit into this now? Because now it seems like it would be next near impossible for him to fit into this roster.
I don't believe that. What I believe for Cowan is that he can, you know, again, he can look and say, boy, there's a lot of contracts here. There's a lot of people signed here. But that doesn't mean what they're saying to him is, give us a reason to keep you. Like, do what you did last year. Knock on the door. Knock it down. Make us aware of your presence. You know, the thing about a guy like Berube is, if you give him reason to play you, he's going to play you. And the challenge here for Cowan is, he can look at, like I said, he can look around and say, boy, there's a lot of bodies here. There's a lot of bodies with NHL contracts here. Like, the other thing, too, is, you know, Lorenz is another guy, even though he's on a PTO, you know, he could have gone anywhere. He came here probably because a little bit of he's a Southwestern Ontario guy, but also maybe he sees opportunity. So there's what Cowan's got to do is do what he did last year. Make everyone notice him, give them a reason to keep him around. And the longer he stays, the more he has an opportunity. Like, all he controls is the way he plays. And last year, they showed him, hey, we noticed, and they kept him around a bit longer. And the same thing will happen this year if he gives them reason to. So, like, we'll see what the math says at the end of the couple of weeks, but he has to do the same thing he did last season, which was make himself noticeable and make himself hard for them to send down.
And so the other guy there, too, is how does that fit for Fraser Minton? Because one of the
same things, deal.
Yeah, just I feel for him a little bit because he makes the team last season, and yep. Now it makes it seem as though, and maybe not to everybody, but that if you're not one of the big talks of camp, and it's not exactly like this team is flush with center depth, that if you're not pushing to make this team, that it feels like a step back. And by all accounts, he's a super intelligent kid. You know, he reads a lot. He seems to be saying the right things about control what you can control. He's clearly mature beyond his years. But do you think that's going to be difficult for him? Or do you think maybe he's going to be a little bit more out of the spotlight because of the Cowan and because of all the roster competition that it won't be such a big story?
No, it'll be a big story because this is Toronto, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not even trying to be glib or make a joke. It's
just, about him on September 13th, so it's kind of fair for you to point that out.
it'll be a story. And, yeah, you know what? Let's just say, let's do the if game, okay, JD? Let's say he doesn't make the team. Yes, there are people are going to be like, oh, step back. I think that kind of talk is insane. Like, I really do think it's insane. That it's not the end of the world. I'm sure Minton would love to make the team. Once again, I'm sure the Leafs would love it if Minton has the same kind of camp he did last year. But I don't think it's the end of the world if he doesn't make the team. Ultimately, what you want is a guy who, when he arrives in the NHL, that he's going to be there for good. But it's the same thing. Like, it's his job. Like, I think the Leafs would love it if Minton pushed to make the team again. Because it goes to that competition, it goes to that thing that makes people uncomfortable. Like, it's very clear to me that one of the things the Maple Leafs are doing is they are saying we have a lot of bodies here because we want to create early pressure. Mm-hmm. We don't want this to be a comfortable camp. We don't want people coming here and think, oh, I've got a spot or I've got a spot. They have a couple of weeks to figure this all out. But I think they're looking for this to be a thing where some of their players start looking over their shoulder. And it's Cowan's job and it's Minton's job to push those guys. And I would expect that he's going to come in here and try to do the exact same thing that he did last year, which was, you know what, we were thinking of sending Minton back after, say, a week, but he deserves to stay. And you know what, now he's earned another day. And now he's earned another day. That's what they want, and it's his job to do that.
Well, it certainly doesn't feel like a comfortable camp because the insinuation from a cap standpoint, a roster standpoint, even with these guys pushing, is that at the end of this, there will be an odd man out from the forward group.
And probably defense, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it just seems a little bit more clear.
Like,
they got
a lot of defensemen there. Like, if I'm Timmins, I'm wondering what's going on here. If I'm Liljegren, I'm wondering what's going on here. Like, I don't think the defensemen, some of them are going to feel any more comfortable than those forwards will.
Yeah. Well, do you think Hakanpaa starts the year on the IR?
I'd have to see him play first. I remember when this whole thing was going on all summer and we're trying to figure out what was going on, JD, the word I kept on getting was, he's there to play.
Mm-hmm.
When Tree Living was the GM in Calgary a couple of years ago when they had that great first round series against Dallas, and Hakanpaa was really good, and he made an impression on them. Like, if they didn't want him to play, JD, they would have given up on this a long time ago. But they worked on it all through the summer.
Yeah.
So unless he's hurt or can't play for whatever reason, I think he's here to play. Like, he is the kind of guy Tree Living likes, and he's the kind of guy that Berube likes.
So, last thing before I let you go, you know, I have to ask about Marner because I would just, it is what it is.
Yes.
Is this going to be a thing where when they go into the season, they will remain open on extensions throughout the year? Or is this going to be a thing where you go, no, once the season starts, the book is closed on this, see you next offseason?
I think that is to be determined. I can see them saying that. Look, I don't have 100% of an answer on this yet. I have a theory that I'm asking about, and I don't have it nailed down yet one way or the other. But the one thing you have to remember is the guiding principle I have for this entire negotiation, JD, is that the agent has always said, he said it to me many times, my advice to my clients is you go to unrestricted free agency unless someone gives you a real reason not to. And so until that happens, that is the way I kind of look at this whole situation. If Marner was smart, mm-hmm. I think he is, the first time he speaks, I would do what McDavid just did.
Yeah.
I'm addressing this once, and I'm not talking about this again. You know, the other thing that happens, too, honestly, is I remember years ago when Bobrovsky did his first big deal with Columbus, he told the Blue Jackets, if we start the season, I'm not negotiating. Mm. And then, like, 2 or 3 months into the season, they got an extension done.
Yeah.
So you can say whatever you want about, yes, we're not negotiating during the season, but if a team comes with the deal that you want, you're going to do it. So I think it's going to be smart for Marner just to come out and say, I'm doing this once, maybe it's the first day of camp next week, and then I'm not talking about it again. And you know what, to be honest, like the more this gets talked about, I just think the more it hurts him in the market.
And yeah, correct.
I'm just as guilty about that as anyone else because it's my job. But I think it hurts him in particular, this kind of conversation.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's why I agree with the approach that it should be. And, you know, if I was doing a theory and, you know, 32 Thoughts returns to the regular rotation next week, so we get to try to hear your theory, but mine would just simply be it doesn't benefit you at all to be discussing a contract in season or having that get out there because that is just going to fan flames throughout the season. And, you know, we saw it happen with Nylander last year, but that's William Nylander. And then he did have a little bit of a lull after the contract extension. Could you imagine that was Mitch Marner? And, you know, given his history and where this team is at, I actually think that it's kind of a risk that you can't take as an organization, as a player. So, yeah, I think I would lead towards what the agent likes to say and what he likes to do and where this thing ends up. Elliot, thanks so much for the time today. I really appreciate it. I hope you had a great summer. And, again, very excited for the return of the show to its regular rotation, man.
Thanks very much, JD. Hope you had a great summer, too.
Thanks, pal. Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts. Again, which returns with Kyle Bukauskas. It's this morning he recorded one and you can get it next week. So yeah, like that's where I'm at with the Marner thing, right? You can't have the negotiations stay open. Obviously there's scenarios where you can get a deal done in season, but it doesn't feel wise. The first time that story gets leaked, right? Let's say the same thing happens. You're in the middle of the year. You sign the contract extension. He goes into a lull or like, man, this guy has clearly been bothered by the media attention before. And I'm rooting for him to say the right thing. And he probably won't be asked about the contract beyond media day. Like, it's just not how it works anymore. I don't think that there's going to be reporters after, you know, game 18 in Columbus where he doesn't score for, you know, 2 days and ask him about his contract or when he starts to rip it up, people, maybe the odd time if he's on a tear, they're going to try and take a shot. But no, I don't think it's going to be a regular part of the discourse around Marner's season. How it does is if they engage in conversations in season. They engage in conversations in season and all of a sudden the fan base gets completely heated up. There's going to be enough talk amongst fans throughout the year about, hey, is this the right thing to do? Blah, 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 blah. It's not going to matter until the playoffs. It really isn't. Because if Mitch Marner has a terrific playoffs and they go on a run and he proves the doubters wrong, there's going to be just about everybody here that's clamoring to keep him on a contract extension and he's going to get whatever the hell he wants. And it seems by all accounts, like the way that he's revered around the league, the way that he's viewed by other front offices, by other players, he's going to be able to get his money, man, in free agency. And he'll have all of the leverage. The Leafs won't be holding any cards. The only way that it gets like pseudo interesting from an in-season standpoint is if the Leafs are like completely out of it somehow. And they approach him with, you know, we're definitely not doing this. Do you want to get out of town early? But ultimately, yeah, I think it behooves him. It behooves the Leafs. to try to keep it as calm as possible. And that involves them just not engaging on contract extension talks, regardless of him, how hot he gets, because he's not doing it if he's ice cold. If he has the Nylander season, I don't think it's going to play out the way that it did with William Nylander, where they're engaging, where they're talking, where there's, you know, a trip to... Mitch Marner's already doing the trip to his homeland all year long. He's playing in Toronto. He's here all year long. So that would be my guess. Yeah, interesting to hear, you know, the say that Hawk and Paw might not start on LTIR. So I kind of thought that that was maybe one of the implications. Yeah, it seems pretty clear that Timmins would be the guy to go, but hearing Liljegren's name invoked is also interesting. Like, maybe it does end up being a trade rather than a cut. But yeah, my money is still on the body that gets moved out. As long as Max Pacioretty can actually skate and he doesn't look completely broken and that he can move somewhat, that it's going to be Nick Robertson who still ends up being the body that's out the door. But let's keep an eye on that. That's going to be the test that Elliot gave. You know, who's playing on the road and who's playing a ton. Anyways, let's take a quick break. Let's come back. More thoughts on the NFL this weekend. Who needs it the most? A couple of picks. And then what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So yeah, not a great start for me gambling on football. Coward's Parlay missed. I was in Europe, though. So I'm jet-lagged. That's the only reason why that I completely missed the Buffalo Bills bet and literally 5 minutes of the game went, oh my God, I'm on the wrong side of this. No! Back to Miami Dolphins. Ugh. A team that I don't think I've ever seen beat the Buffalo Bills with Josh Allen at quarterback. Anyway, Blue Jays back tonight. Football this weekend. Do a couple games quickly here that I actually like from a betting standpoint, because I like to get the ones in early that I think are going to move. I think that are going to get a ton of action. Number one is the Chargers and the Panthers. I don't get this line at all. It's -5 for the Chargers that are on the road. And as we know, the road is fine for the Chargers. Like, their whole thing is, well, when they're in their stadium, as we saw last week, the other team can fill it up with over 70% of their fans. There was tons of Raiders fans at that Chargers game. So, looked like 75, 80% Raiders. There were a bunch of fights. I don't know how many of you follow, you know, NFL fight Twitter accounts, but that was the most I've ever seen at one game. It was just brawl city at that Chargers game. I don't know if it's just the Raiders fans being Raiders fans or if it's Chargers fans saying enough is enough. Enough is enough. Everyone makes fun of us. And now we got so many of you here. We're fighting back. We're doing something about this. We're trying to stamp a reputation. You come here, we're fighting you now. We're fighting you in the seats. I always wonder where security is when those things happen. Like, I feel like at a hockey game, if you get in a scrap, security is going to be on top of you in like a second. And at NFL games, you'll see these brawls that last for like 4 minutes and there's no sign of a security guard. Like, we had a guy throw someone's hat on the ice and it was just boom, security right there almost immediately. Okay. But yeah, I love the Chargers in this game. The Harbaugh effect, I thought we saw it immediately. They can run the rock. Dobbins looks healthy. Herbert was like, but like the Panthers, what would lead you to believe that there's ever a line that you should back the Panthers by less than a touchdown, less than 10 points, for God's sakes? I saw a team that looked to be in complete shambles. And to get back to the fan point that I was making that I got off track on because of all the fighting and all the stupid stuff, Panthers tickets right now are going for like $2. They can't get people in the stadium. The Florida Panthers have become a better draw than the Carolina Panthers. And it's not even close. The Carolina Panthers are just, it's a broken organization. And they're playing a team that has some momentum that is looking to make the playoffs. And I just don't think Harbaugh is going to miss the opportunity to beat up on these guys. And I haven't seen anything from Bryce Young. I haven't seen anything different from that Carolina team. Certainly not when they got absolutely destroyed. Destroyed by the Saints in week one, that they're going to come out in week two and all of a sudden Bryce Young is going to be dotting passes down the field. Like, he's going to be avoiding pressure, that he's not going to look, you know, 5'6". I don't see it. I think the Chargers kill him. I think it's going to be a blowout, and so I'm easily laying those 5 points. Number two, same thing, road favorite. Ooh, kind of sketchy to put two of them together, right? But Malik Willis is starting for the Packers, and they're only getting 2.5? Has no one seen Malik Willis before? I have. Am I the only person that's seen Malik Willis throw a football? Well, like, he doesn't really. He mostly tries to run it. The Colts are good. The Colts are competent. They've got one of the best signal callers in the NFL. Anthony Richardson looked, like, really explosive and really interesting in week one. And they kind of pushed the Houston Texans. I think that, like, that offense is explosive. They can put up points. Their defense didn't really look great, and I would imagine that the Packers are going to kind of run it down their throats a little bit. But 2.5? You're telling me I only got to lay a field goal against Malik Willis? I don't care about the Packers' infrastructure. I don't care about their running game. I don't care about Lambeau. It's Malik Willis. I will never miss an opportunity to bet against Malik Willis and Bryce Young on short lines. That is the theme of what I'm going to be doing in week two. I just, and here's the thing, too. If I lose, okay, if I lose to Bryce Young and Malik Willis, I can live with that. I can live with that. What I can't live with is betting on Malik Willis and the Packers and going, you know, Packers at home getting points. It's Lambeau, baby. It's magical Lambeau. Like, I can't live with that when they're down 14-0 in the first quarter. That's certainly not a thing I will be doing. No chance. Absolutely no chance. Now it's time for a dog. Although it's kind of like a fake dog. It's a road dog. I like road teams. I actually like a lot of the road teams. Like this week, I'm looking at them. I like the Jags at home. I kind of like the Vikings at home getting 5. They look good, but I also don't really want to fall for that. Like that's a stay away game for me where I'm like, I tried to talk myself into it this morning where I went, you know, Sam Darnold and he was there and revenge game. I don't know why revenge, they kind of rejuvenated his career, but either way, he was there and the Vikings look good and it's 5 points at home. And I was like, this reeks of the Niners just kicking their teeth in and going, like, what are you talking about? We just whooped the Jets' ass. You thought that we were going to lose to Sam Darnold? No, we will not do that. So I'm staying away from that, staying away from Giants Commanders. That's like, that's one where you get cute, where you go, ooh, the Giants actually might move the ball on that crappy defense, or ooh, the Giants are trash, and so this has got to be a win for the Commanders. Nope, stay away, stay away, stay away, stay away. But I like the Rams on the road. They're getting a point. It's basically a pick 'em. I just don't think the Rams going 0-2. It comes down to that. What's more likely, the Rams start 0-2 or the Cardinals start 0-2? Bang, easy, boom. There you go. Free advice. Rams are good, man. Cooper Kupp looks back. And I think that some of this line moves because of the Puka Nacua thing, but they survive that. They can endure that. It's Sean McVay. It's Matt Stafford. It's a much better run organization that pushed a Lions team that a lot of people have going to the Super Bowl this year, hopefully myself included. I'm really rooting for it, but I don't want to even make the prediction because I don't want to jinx it. I want my Lions there. Like, I need my Lions there. I need them to take care of business. We cannot have another Niners Super Bowl. I only have so many of these. Like, I keep getting away with it as a Seahawks fan, like these Niners Super Bowl losses. I'm like, whew, right down to the wire. Thank you, Baltimore. Thank you, Kansas City. Thank you, Kansas City. I feel like I get another one. It's just I can't hold the gate anymore. The troops are rushing through the gates. But yeah, I like the Rams here a lot. I was surprised by the line. Like, I know it's divisional and I know it's home and the Cardinals look competent. They push the Bills, and maybe I should even have a little bit more respect for the Cardinals given that they were beating the Bills and that they could have beaten the Bills and what happened with Miami on Thursday night. But yeah, short week. I don't know. I'm not going to read too much into it. I'm just going to go with that. I'm going to go with the Rams. So those are my three favorite picks. Those are the teams that I'm backing. Those are the ones that I like. I think there's a lot of stayaways this week. I got to tell you, lot of road faves. And I backed three of them, but there's even more. Like, Seahawks are road faves. Niners are road faves. Jets are road faves. Steelers are road faves. Like, there's a bunch. There's a bunch out there this weekend. So stay alert. Stay safe. Anyways, Mike Jose, what did we miss?
Well, let's stick to football. I'm curious about one of these games because it's probably the biggest game of the weekend.
Oh, it's absolutely the biggest game of the
weekend. It's the Bengals. It's the Chiefs. Ja'Marr Chase had some interesting comments basically this week before this matchup. He says, it's not if. We are the team to beat in the AFC, and we know it. And we got to play like it, too.
Yeah.
He also said, we don't like them. They don't like us.
That's very clear.
There were also some other comments by Cam Taylor-Britt, who basically said this about Xavier Worthy. Speed. That's about it. He can run straight.
Yeah,
some trash talking before this game.
No, those teams love trash talk. They do hate each other. I actually am really looking forward to this just because Chase is one of those like real ones where he does not want to be friends on the football field. Have you ever seen that video of, I can't remember who it is, but I think it's a Chiefs player that tries to jersey swap with him? No? You never seen that?
No, I haven't.
Okay. There's some, I think it's a Chiefs player. It's either a Chiefs player or like a Steelers or a Ravens player. Like it's a divisional or conference like blood feud rival. And some guy goes up to him, it's like, I get your jersey. He's like, hell no, hell no. Like, he's so mad.
Chiefs, Willie Gay Jr.
Yeah, so you brought it up? Yeah, it is Willie Gay Jr. Okay, yeah, so it is a Chiefs player. Like, he is not playing around with these rivalries. You gotta talk like that. That's part of the Bengals' aura. In fact, I think if they weren't talking like that, I'd feel worse about them. Like, we all know that that's not true. The Chiefs are the team. I don't think it takes a brain surgeon to be like, you know, the Bengals, they're right there. No, they just lost to the Patriots. They just lost to Jacoby Brissett. Granted, it was a lot of bad, like it was a lot of fumbles and you go, whatever. But the Bengals didn't look good in that game. It wasn't like you were going, oh my God, this is the flukiest, crappiest loss of all time. The Patriots looked like the better football team. Burrow has questions about his wrist. Chase has had all of his contractual stuff that's been leading this offseason. T. Higgins didn't play in that game. Mixon's out in Texas running circles around guys. And, you know, he was never really that for them, but so it's not going to be the hugest loss. But, yeah, I don't have a ton of faith in the Bengals. Man, again, to get back to the Bills thing that I was saying earlier, you want to talk about windows closing. Like, why isn't it the Bengals? Like, if Joe Burrow... Josh Allen doesn't miss games, okay? Josh Allen, I think, has missed one game in his entire career due to injury. He is, I'm not, knock on wood, he's a pretty healthy player. He gets nicked up. He gets hit hard. He is not afraid of contact. We're terrified of that day where he just gets smoked and something happens, but ultimately, like, Tua Tagovailoa ran forward in one play, and it's like his season might be over. Joe Burrow is kind of similar the way I feel about him with his wrist. Like, he gets sacked really hard. What's your confidence level that Joe Burrow is going to get back up? So, yeah, no, I don't want to really do too much of this after week one because, yeah, the overreaction, so many of them just, like, never really live up to the hype. But if you're talking about most important games going into this weekend... like, you could make some cases for some other teams going like, all right, well, who doesn't want to start 0-2? Because I don't care about things like, oh, well, I guess the Ravens need to take care of business because if they lost to Oakland, that would be really tough. They start 0-2 with their schedule. I think if the Jets lost to the Titans, that would be cataclysmic, but I just don't anticipate that they will. But no, this is the most important game of the week. Like, this is you against your rivals. This is you posturing yourselves as still one of the teams in the AFC. You lost to the Patriots. That's got to plant some seed of doubt. But if the Chiefs, and again, you're going on the road. If the Chiefs, who you are kind of, you've built a mythos around this team that you are the Chief killers. You're the Chief defenders. That you're the team that has always been the best representatives of the AFC. And if you were healthy, you would be the ones that could de-crown these guys. You're the ones that... are not afraid to look them in the eye, go toe-to-toe. You have the quarterback. You have the swagger. You have the offensive pieces. You have everything to be able to slow these guys down. If you win week two of your season, get trounced in KC, and that stadium is loud, and Burrow doesn't finish the game, you know, like via injury, or they're just getting blown out and they don't view it as worth it. Yeah, I don't know how the Bengals... I don't know how they get the season back. Like, that reeks of disaster. So, no, this is by far the most important game of the week. But I don't have a... After what I saw in week one, I don't have a ton of faith in the Bengals to win this one.
Yeah, do you think it has bigger repercussions? Like, it's not just their season's over, but the whole mythos that you're talking about, it's done. Because the whole thing is Joe Burrow is the Chiefs killer.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it doesn't die if they lose this game, but it kind of dies if they get blown out. Like, again, if this is an embarrassing game, then it's hard to be like, we're the Chiefs killers. Hey, just look, 3 years ago, we did it. Yeah. What have you done for me lately? That's the league. What's next?
All right. So Shannon Sharp, I don't know if you heard about this, but he accidentally went live on Instagram having some fun. He quoted,
having some fun. Okay.
I've turned IG live on, so yeah. I don't know how it works.
Yeah.
He said, I've never done it. Obviously, I'm embarrassed. I'm someone that is extremely, extremely private and have one of your most intimate details.
Can I just say something quickly there before you finish the quote? I love that he's like, I'm someone who's extremely private, who has a podcast called Club Shay Shay, yeah. Where the whole point of the podcast is to like bear all and to get as much information as possible from everybody. And they like overshare all the time. That's like just a very interesting position to take. Like, no, you know who's like a very private person? Justin Smoke. Like, go, you can't, you're not going to find Justin Smoke doing a podcast with another guy and they're going to be bringing on, you know, Cat Williams. That's not going to happen. Shannon Sharp has been in the media eye his entire career. He's never taken a beat from being in the media's eye. He's on some of the biggest shows in the country. To be said, like, I'm a very private person is like, it's a little preposterous. It's actually worse than Jamar Chase saying that they're the team to go through in the AFC when they're facing a team that's, you know, trying to do make NFL history and go back to back to back. But anyway, sorry. Keep going.
The audio heard for the entire world to hear. I'm embarrassed for a number of reasons. ESPN will not discipline Sharp. So I got a question. Was Paul Pierce done hard by?
No, that's a completely different thing. I like how you just try to top the most absurd things that are said today on the show. No, Paul Pierce was not done harshly. Just like, go back and watch those clips of Paul Pierce. You ever watch the one where it's like he's on the live gambling stream and he's just like, he doesn't know they're live. And KG the whole time is like, P, we're live, P. Like the show's happening now. Because he's just absolutely buckled and trying to get him to, you know, engage in nightlife activities. I like that he first tried to play the hacked card. That was good. He's like, I was hacked. And everyone's like, no.
So he did say that his, like, the guy who controls his Instagram posted that instead. And then he opened up. But, I mean, how much of that is believable?
None. I'll tell you this right now. I don't even think that it was a mistake. That's my real belief. No, I don't think it was a mistake. No, it's not a conspiracy. Dude, these guys traffic in being, again, like, one of the most viral podcasts. Like, this does so much for the podcast. Think about Ocho Cinco talking about this. Like,
he's been great.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm dubious. I just say that. As soon as I saw it, I went, my antennas went up. And especially that it was, like, multiple things in the news cycle being like, oh, I was hacked, and that was the ESPN part of it, and now I'm embarrassed. It's like, yeah. And then you'll get a pod thing on it, and they're going to turn it into content. And, yeah, it's just my belief is not an accident.
They already have merch. So
yeah. They already have merch?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, buddy. See, you guys are suckers. You guys are suckers. Big mistake. Oh, thank you for the apology, sir. Like, no, it's obviously. What are we doing here? Actually, it couldn't be more clear that that was oopsies. Like, who? Think about what has to happen there. Like, you know, you're on IG Live. He's like, I don't even know how that works. Anyway, whatever. I think it was clearly for the content, for the love of the game.
All right. Klay Thompson posted to his Instagram that he was watching the 2011 Dallas Mavericks run. He posted a little emoji of like the notebook. So he's taking some notes on the Dallas Mavericks.
This is just pandering.
Yeah, it does feel like that.
Yeah, it is. It's just pandering.
It also made me feel like,
you won more championships.
Really,
like, what, you know what's more useful to is the modern day game, like where it is, because that was 2011?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so 2011. Game has changed quite a bit. That's not really the film study you need, Klay. So, like, and who are you on the 2011 team? Are you Jason Terry? Like, who? You're not Dirk.
No. Definitely not Dirk.
You're not Dirk.
Do you rewatch any championship videos?
I mean, I did a full Raptors rewatch during COVID, and I would say that that's the only championship highlights I watch. The weird one is that, and I've rewatched the, like, the 2010 Olympic game fully. I rewatched it fully with no sound once, which was incredible. It was really, I actually recommend once every, we rewatch television shows. We don't do enough rewatching of amazing sports games. It used to be like, I was always a huge Hardwood Classics guy. Like, I loved Hardwood Classics on NBA TV. I used to just live for those. I remember, like, getting DVRs for the first time. I remember when I got the ability for PVR, the entire box was only just filled with Hardwood Classics. That was it. I just had Hardwood Classics, and I would go through the games, and then I would have to, like, the box would get full, and I would have to go through it and decide which classic games I would have to delete. And you know what they always were? the Bill Russell games and the Will Chamberlain. Because I'd get all excited. I would go like, ooh, cool. I get to watch Bill Russell, Will Chamberlain go head-to-head, and then I would watch it, and I'd be like, oh, I wish I never saw this. I wish I didn't see that this is how we used to live. Like, it kind of hurts the, yeah, you just keep it. It's better in your mind. It's better in your mind what basketball used to be. It's pretty much only watchable from, yeah, the 70s onward. But yeah, I loved Hardwood Classics. I loved rewatching those games. I can't rewatch the Seahawks Super Bowl because honestly, the Seahawks Super Bowl, it doesn't even, like, really bring me joy because it just reminds me of what could have been. They should have gone back to back, and, like, losing it that way, true. I think about far more than I do the win. I'm so glad I got the win. I met a Seahawks fan I actually met multiple Seahawks fans in the Munich NFL bar, but I watched the full Seahawks game with another guy who was from Seattle, and we were having a blast, and we were chopping it up a little bit about the championship and, you know, certain things like merch and going over that, but I've never been able to. I think I rewatched the game right after. Like, I recorded it, and then I rewatched it, like, the next day while I was just, like, basking in the glow, but I've never gone back and done it. Raptors, I've watched every single game over.
Really?
Yeah, every single one. And I've watched...
Like, front to back?
What?
Like, from start to finish?
Yeah, start to finish. I've seen every single game more than once.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dedication.
Well, I did a podcast on it during COVID when there was no more sports, and I was like, well, I need to get creative, so I did that. But it was actually super enjoyable because I feel like there was a ton of stuff that I missed, and because you're in the moment, there's a reason why they do film study, that you don't just play the game and then it's over. But yeah, I've seen multiple of the Raptors games, like, over and over again. Like, I've watched a few. Like, I could tell you it, pretty much in, like, there's probably like five games in that run that I could, like, run through with a lot of memory. Like, it's not quite Tommy Boy to me. Like, I know every line in Tommy Boy. I can go through that entire movie and just be like, line, line, line. I got it. I've been basically practicing it with my brother for the last 20 years. So we got it down. But yeah, I've watched the Raptors quite a bit. I'm saying there's too much sports now. We have too much access to too many things because Hardwood Classics used to be a thing. And now, like, I can't imagine sitting down and trying to watch old games. Like, I don't have the time with everything I gotta watch. Do you? Like, what actually? Like, yeah. Do you watch Phillies? Do you watch the Philly special?
I do, yeah. That Super Bowl has the mic'd up version, too. So I do rewatch that one quite a bit.
Yeah, that's different, though. That's not really watching. That's like watching a highlight tape where you watch the mic'd up. Because, yeah, the mic'd ups are cool.
I do watch Liverpool, like, championship full games.
All right.
Those ones are nice.
You know, honestly, you should be working more. If you have time to be watching Liverpool full championship games, it actually does a lot in terms of explaining why the show is the way that it is. Like, that's how you're spending your free time. Interesting.
Give me a shot.
Subscribe to this podcast. Leave 5 stars. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JD Bunkus. Reach out anytime. I'm going downtown today to interview DeMar DeRozan. That'll air next week. But yeah, we're back. And we're back to 2 hours in a couple of weeks, too. So stay tuned for that. See you then.